This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. You may be willing to spend $100 to repair your grandfather's pocket watch, but you might not even replace the battery on your Timex. When your toaster breaks, do you take it to get fixed or just get a new one? Does anybody fix VCRs anymore? Microwave ovens? Consumer goods are more disposable than ever, partly because they're cheaper and partly because a lot of them are so mysterious. A cell phone seems well beyond the range of an average basement tinkerer, and who's ever seen a cell phone repair shop? We throw away a lot of stuff that our parents or our younger selves used to get fixed, and the things we do choose to repair acquire more meaning along with a new set of sprockets. Today we'll talk with skilled craftsmen about why they spend their lives piecing together parts of pens and hammering new heels on old shoes, and we want to hear your stories. What do you toss away that you used to get fixed? What do you still repair, and why? Later in the program, German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder vows never to send German troops to Iran. That's right, Iran. We'll find out why. And young Bolsheviks on trial in Russia. But first, if you've gone to great lengths to have something silly repaired or maybe taught yourself to maintain certain household items, give us a call. We want your repair stories. We want your repair philosophy. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And we begin with Robert DiRinaldo, an award-winning shoe craftsman and owner of DiRinaldo's Shoe Service in Trafford, Pennsylvania. He's been repairing shoes there for 65 years, and he joins us now by phone from his store. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you for having me on your program.
Now, I know you said that one of your most remarkable repairs ever was a very rare pair of sharkskin boots. Tell us the story.
Yeah, we had a pair of sharkskin cowboy boots that a man brought in, and he wanted them converted into clogs like they're wearing today, and he wanted to keep that thing going with the clog look, but with the western toe and the western heel.
Mm-hmm.
So we removed the backs and turned them into clogs, and he was well satisfied. And from that point, he brought in a lot of other very expensive boots to have the same thing done. And I think he was really happy because you couldn't buy anything like that in a market nowhere. Those are just some of the unusual things that we do.
He'd best hope the boot style didn't come back into fashion. There's no way to go back, is there?
No, there's no way to go back, but something like clogs is probably a seasonal thing, and he has many cowboy boots. In fact, one summer he brought in a pair of cowboy boots to have converted into golf shoes because he used cowboy boots almost on everything that he done.
Well, you could see sort of eccentric items like that keeping going. But do you find in general people bring in just their regular dress shoes less often than they used to?
Yeah, it's less often people are getting, because there's the economy, there's more types of shoes on the market today. And realize, you know, back just a few 20, 30 years ago, there wasn't so many shoes in the wardrobe. And today, every family, child, and men and women, you can count 6, 7, 8 pair of shoes in there. So actually, they're not wearing them out like it was many years ago when you had one or two pair.
I wonder, what about the age of your customers? Do you have a lot of young customers?
Yeah, we have a variety, because you got to remember one thing. We have a lot of young people. First of all, you know, we only repair quality shoes. That's what people think, but we repair all type of shoes. But mostly the quality shoes are from younger people who have office jobs, who dress a lot better than just casual. You know, the girls are wearing fancy clothes with fancy shoes that are expensive. Same with the men. They're wearing quality leather shoes that cost anywhere from $150 up. And so, you know, when you have a pair of shoes like that, that they're beating on the concrete, they're going to get them fixed because they're comfortable, and it's only a fraction of the price to have these shoes repaired.
Now, I understand when you won the 100th anniversary award by the Shoe Service Institute of America, there was a contest involved. What did you do?
Okay, the contest, well, first of all, the 100th year anniversary contest sponsored by the Shoe Service Institute was for only the past winners who won the Grand Silver Cup.
The best of the best.
The best of the best contest. That's exactly what it was. And it was only the ones who won the Grand Silver Cup, which is given out once a year. And I was eligible to enter because I won in 1987 the Grand Silver Cup. So that made me eligible to enter the 100-year anniversary contest. And it was held in Philadelphia in 2004. I came out in first place for the best of the best contest. And what it does, it's to promote shoe repairing. By winning that contest, you're on television, you're on the newspapers, and what it does, it helps shoe repairing in general. There's a lot of people that don't have their shoes fixed because naturally a lot of towns anymore don't have shoe repair shops, so they have to look for them and don't even know the shoes can be repaired.
Hmm. Well, Robert DiRinaldo, good luck, and maybe if there's another contest, you'll succeed there as well.
Well, right now I've been a judge for the last 18 years. In fact, this 100-year anniversary contest, they had other judges who did that one, but I'm back being a judge again, and so who knows how long I'll do that. As long as I love this work, I'll be doing it.
Appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
Robert DiRinaldo is, as you heard, an award-winning shoe craftsman and owner of DiRinaldo's Shoe Service, and he was with us by phone from his store in Trafford, Pennsylvania. Now, the question of whether you should fix it or forget it is a tough one, aside from the cost analysis. Maybe that vintage refrigerator is just too close to your heart to throw away. Maybe you'll want one from the next wave of internet surfing refrigerators, complete with electronic family calendar. Well, here to talk with about what people do and what they should do when it comes to repairs is Mark Kotkin. He's the Associate Director of Survey Research at Consumer Reports, and he joins us from their studios in Yonkers, New York. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Now, I understand the upcoming story in Consumer Reports' October issue is titled Fix It or Forget It. What's the answer? I guess the answer probably depends.
Exactly. We're all faced with that issue when our appliance breaks, our electronics gear break, and should we fix it or not? So we looked at a bunch of factors. We looked at what did that product cost to replace, what is the repair cost, what repair problems you might have, how old is that product, and to what degree is that replacement in many ways a better product than what you're replacing?
Mm-hmm.
Is it more efficient? For example, washing machines and refrigerators are more efficient than that 20-year-old one. The television may have HD capability. So in many cases, we recommend not repairing a product if it's several years old.
Mm-hmm. Now, some
products probably not worth repairing at all if they are under $150 and not covered by a warranty.
I was interested to read in the previous, this is a sort of recurring theme that you guys have, Fix It or Forget It. I know you did a survey in 1997 and then another one in 2001. And in 2001, you came to the conclusion that 12% fewer responders to your survey, 12% readers in our last survey repaired 12% fewer comparable broken products than did readers survey in 1997. So I wonder, is that trend continuing?
Absolutely. And one reason for that is products like a 27-inch television, which back then was several hundred dollars, now is only a couple hundred dollars, and it may not make sense to repair it.
Well, let's get some listeners on the line. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's begin with Patrick. Patrick calling from Modesto in California.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
I spent 2 years in China, and they would repair everything. I repaired everything, too, over there just because it was so much cheaper to repair it than buy new.
Right. Everything, including cell phones?
Yeah, let's see, you could go to just about anywhere they sold cell phones, and there would be someone tinkering over a little desk with a desk lamp on it, and you could get your cell phone fixed for about $5.
Obviously, the Mark Kotkin, the issues of price are very different in China than here. What does Consumer Reports recommend about cell phones?
Well, anything that costs under $150 is probably not worth the repairing because the repair costs would be probably more than half the cost of a replacement, and your replacement will be better. So I understand there is a huge environmental issue here,
mm-hmm.
which I think we're all uncomfortable with, but the basic advice, at least in this country, is probably not worth fixing your toaster, your VCR, et cetera.
And in China, Patrick, I guess everything is worth fixing.
Yeah, everything from clothing to cell phones to shoes. You could fix your shoe on the corner for $1.50. I mean, just lots of people make their living doing that.
Patrick, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's get another caller on the line, and this will be Jeff. Jeff calling us from St. Louis.
Hi.
Hi.
I am in the line of work where I fix broken musical instruments that got chucked off the bleachers at the football games. And you can see in this line of work that it's starting to become disposable. More and more instruments are being made in Asia, so the cost is going down to the point where it's almost to the point where people will consider buying a new one rather than fixing mom's old hand-me-down instrument that's in the closet.
Are we talking clarinets, tubas?
Clarinets, tubas, trumpets, saxophones.
All that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So previously, you guys had a real strong interest in a losing season where nobody would get excited.
Oh, yeah.
And now, of course, you win a few games and you got to replace all these instruments.
Yeah.
Those are exactly the kind of price considerations, Mark Kotkin, that people make about all kinds of things. I don't know if your survey included musical instruments or not.
No, we didn't think of that one.
Jeff, and when we're talking about replacement, how much do these things cost when you're buying them for the band?
Well, like say for example, a student line entry level clarinet. Retail price on it used to be around $650, $700, and now you're seeing off-brands pop up from Asia that are priced down around $250, $300. Hmm. And the price to refurbish an older clarinet is about $200 or a little bit more.
So you end up with something that may not be as good as the brand new one.
Yeah, I guess you get what you pay for.
Jeff, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thanks.
We're talking about whether to fix it or just chuck it, and we want to hear from you. Tell us the story of a cherished piece of junk or the expensive watch you threw out without thinking twice. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. To repair or not to repair, that is the question for all of us when a toaster goes on the fritz or the chain on your bike rusts through. Call us with your stories of repair dilemmas. What's worth fixing? What do you simply toss? And then head off to the store to buy a new one. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Mark Kotkin. He's the Associate Director of Survey Research at Consumer Reports. And before we let you go, I did want to ask also about another item in your survey from 4 years ago. You said 16% of readers who chose not to repair an item said the process was too inconvenient. What did they give as a reason for that?
Well, you have to take it to a shop or have someone come into your home to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to wait and be without that product for a fair amount of time. And sometimes it comes back and it's not fixed properly.
And you always have to wait for those, whatever part you need to fix it, it's always at the factory.
Well, that's often the case.
And there is more and more the case where products are being replaced so quickly, particularly electronic parts. Even the factory may not be a good source of parts.
That we often found that to be the case. It's just not worth fixing, or the part may be so expensive that it's not cost-effective to make that repair.
Mark Kotkin, thank you for taking the time to speak with us today. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Mark Kotkin is Associate Director of Survey Research at Consumer Reports, and he was with us from that group's studios in Yonkers, New York. For the mechanically inept, when something breaks and you don't want to shell out for a replacement, the Internet may be your best resource for repair instructions. Samuel Goldwasser runs a website called repairfac.org. He answers questions on how to repair everything from lasers to microwaves to photocopiers and computers. He's with us now by phone from his home in Balakinwyd, Pennsylvania. Nice to have you on the show.
Thank you very much.
What kind of repair traffic do you get at the website?
The traffic of the website's been growing steadily, despite the laments of some of your former guests.
Uh-huh.
We get something like 1.5 to 2 million hits a month just on one of the sites that we have, and there are actually around a half a dozen duplicate sites around the world.
And what are people asking about?
Well, ironically, it's gotten to the point where the most popular questions are about lawnmowers.
Lawnmowers?
Rotary lawnmowers, the kind that have a gas engine.
Uh-huh.
Primarily, probably, because they haven't changed a whole lot in 30 years.
I guess not.
And it's still possible for the weekend tinkerer to repair them very effectively.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Anybody who grew up around engines, a lawnmower engine is no great mystery.
That's right. I mean, in a few years, it may be, as they go to more and more emission control devices on the lawnmowers, but right now, a lawnmower engine is about the same as it was 30 years ago and about the same as a VW bug had in the 60s or whenever they were popular.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, if, as you go through all of these entries, as you run this website, what have you been able to discern about this idea we're calling about the philosophy of repair? What do you fix and when do you decide not to fix stuff?
Well, I really can't put it a whole lot better than your former guest, but there are three factors which I list here, and obviously there are many, many things that come into play. But one of them, obviously, is cost. And to just extend the analogy here, we have, take case of a color television.
Right.
In, say, 1960, a color television cost around $1,000, which would be $5,000 or $10,000 in today's inflated dollars. In 1980, a better television cost maybe $500. And today you can buy that next to the soup and nuts at the supermarket for $150.
Yeah, you get a special at Walmart and you're golden.
Yeah, I mean, I even saw one at the local supermarket that actually works very well. How long it will last is another issue. These costs are not coming down only because the technology is improving. They're coming down because cost is being squeezed out of all these products. And the $150 television or the $49 VCR are not going to last as long as that equipment from 20 or 30 years ago. But on the other hand, while it works, it's going to be much less of a pain to maintain.
Hmm.
A $1,000 color television came along with a technician to set it up and adjust it.
Yeah, yeah. Here's an email we got from Liz Lucker in Little Rock, Arkansas. My favorite personal story about keeping something working is from my mother, who got a toaster oven from my brother as a Mother's Day gift when he was 10 years old. He's now 44. She occasionally brings it to a repair shop to be fixed, even though she could buy a new one for much less, simply because my brother bought it for her with his own money. The toaster oven, which she uses every day, still works. She keeps it sparkling clean. Well, I guess there are some things that people will repair for exactly that sentimental value.
There are indeed, and there's a whole other area of people maintaining equipment that just isn't available anymore, like turntables to play vinyl LPs and D-tube amplifiers and other types of audio equipment that people have really grown attached to.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Tina. Tina calling from Peoria, Arizona.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that a couple years ago, I got a digital camera for Christmas, and I loved this camera. And I broke the screen on the back of the camera. So the thing was useless because I couldn't read any of the commands anymore. And I attempted to get it repaired, and when I brought it into the camera shop, they told me that the actual camera to replace it was so expensive that it was cheaper to buy a new camera. So I took their advice, and I bought a new camera, and then I thought, well, you know what, maybe I'll just dump the money into it and give it to my son to use. So I brought it back to the camera shop. This was probably 6 months after my initial trip in there, and the piece itself was no longer available, and the camera cannot be fixed.
Hmm.
And it's a shame because I absolutely love the camera, and I would have paid the money to repair it and give it to my son after I bought the new one, and now it can't be fixed.
Hmm.
And we're talking about a time frame here of like 6 months when I could have paid an enormous amount of money to get it repaired, and then 6 months later, now the part's not even available, and the camera's no longer made.
Yeah. You must get a lot of these kinds of calls, Samuel Goldwasser.
Yes, unfortunately. In part, there's some truth to that, but there's also an issue with conflict of interest. If you take something into a store that has their main business in selling you new stuff, they're not going to be very inclined to tell you it's repairable at all, or else they'll give you an extremely high estimate. So I'm not saying this is what happened in your case, but I've seen it firsthand in some very large chain stores, whose name I won't mention on the air.
Mm-hmm.
But they will diagnose what turned out to be, in this case it was a VCR, and the only problem it needed was a drop of oil in a strategic location. and they basically said it was not repairable, or they gave a price like $200 to repair a $300 VCR at that time.
Yeah, well, we all know that expression. Ooh, gee, I don't know about that. Gee, willikers, tisk, tisk.
And then, but we have this shiny new model we'll sell you for.
Yeah.
Special today only.
Low price of only, yes.
Yes.
Tina, we're sorry for your experience. Good luck to you next time.
Thanks.
Okay. And here's another email. This from Jim in Fort Collins, Colorado. The recent failure of my inkjet printer, only 2 years old, obliged me to contact the manufacturer, the only available repair source. It quickly became obvious that repair would be uneconomical for two reasons. First, the cost of repair was greater than the cost of replacement with a refurbished unit of a later and more advanced model. Second, the newer technology of the replacement was inherently more valuable than of the unit I'd originally purchased. Maybe a better option would be to admit that such devices should be designed for recyclability rather than for repairability.
I have to agree with that wholeheartedly. Inkjet printers have to be, the, on the one hand, most incredibly well-engineered devices on the planet, but on the other hand, as cheaply built as possible. And their sole function in life is to sell ink cartridges. It's not the razor, it's the razor blade.
I see. They want to hook us on the ink, on the cartridge.
Sure. And they sell you an inkjet printer for what? What's the bottom line now? $60, maybe cheaper?
Mm-hmm.
The cartridges each cost $30 or $40 to replace. And some manufacturers go to the extreme of putting a chip in the ink cartridge so that you cannot install third-party cartridges on this machine and have it work.
Third-party meaning cheaper or somebody else's anyway. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Somebody else's. They basically make it recognize their ink cartridge and say, we're not going to play a game with that one.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Alan. Alan with us from Fort Bragg in California.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I live in a small town along the Mendocino Coast, and because we're living sort of country life here, we have to be more resourceful. And there's the high school opens up its technology, its electronics class for in the evening for people who want to come in and either work on computers or repair just about anything. And my my stereo in my truck had broken, and I'd only had it for about 2 months. So I was getting prepared to buy another one because, like they say, to fix it costs a fortune. And so Francis said, well, bring it in. We'll just take a look at it. And we took it out and opened it up, and all it was a gear had shifted out of sync. And we just popped it back in and saved me about $250.
We're all intimidated by these new electronic devices, Samuel Goldwasser.
Well, the irony is that most problems are very simple. The causes are very simple. They tend to come down to bad connections, broken wires, or even if it's something catastrophic resulting in, for example, a totally dead television set. Those are the easy ones to fix. When something is very obviously broken, it's much easier to fix than the piece of equipment that has some kind of subtle problem and only shows up on alternate Thursday.
Right, that intermittent problem guaranteed to be fix itself whenever the chief engineer walks in the room. That's when it's in radio.
Well, apparently it didn't work for the shuttle because they never did find a problem with the fuel sensor gauge.
Yeah,
but that's a classic intermittent problem.
There you go. Alan, thanks very much.
You bet.
Good advice. Samuel Goldwasser, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
Samuel Goldwasser is on the Research Faculty for Electrical Computer Engineering at Drexel University and the author of RepairFact.org, and he was with us by phone from his home in Ballykinwood in Pennsylvania. Here's another email that we received. When I first went to Ecuador in 1980, there were vendors on the street who would refill your ballpoint pen with a syringe. The vendors had inky tables surrounded by people of all stripes, from suited businessmen to laborers. But when I returned a few years later, these vendors were no longer there. It was progress, I guess, that they could now afford to throw away their Bics. That an email from Stefan. Well, there are people who do repair pens, generally those that are a little bit better constructed than Bics. Joining us now is Chris Sullivan, the president of Farney's Pens here in Washington, D.C. He's been repairing and selling high-quality pens for more than 20 years now. He's been kind enough to join us here in Studio 3A. Thanks very much for coming in.
And thank you for having me.
When Farney's was opened back in 1929, the market for pen repairs must have been a little bit different than it is today.
Yes, basically back in 29, that's really all they did. They bought one pen, and they always got it repaired. It needed a lot of tune-ups because the parts would wear down and decay with time.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of politicians and big business people would come into Mr. Farney's shop and mingle and talk while he would repair and clean their pens so they could go off the next day and use them.
Now, pens, obviously, a more important feature back in those days. Of course, we didn't have the alternative, sending email.
Right. It was the major way of communication, and really just they had one or two pens, and it was very important to them that that was in working order.
So these days, why would somebody repair a pen rather than throw it out and just get a new one?
It's really the emotional connection to that writing instrument. Some people have pens that are passed down from their grandfathers or their parents, and they want to continue to use that.
Mm-hmm.
They also buy pens to accessorize and use them every day for their signing, so it's almost a power tool. So it's worth taking the time to keep it in good working order. The modern-day pens have less problems, say, than the earlier pens in the 20s. Materials are better and just don't have the issues, but it does happen.
We're talking about the philosophy of repair. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I wonder, Mr. Solomon, when people bring in old pens to have them repaired, presumably because they have, well, some of them are pretty valuable, but most of them, I assume, have sentimental value of some sort or another. Do they want old parts, the old kinds of parts, to fit onto those pens, or are they happy with newer fangled upgrades?
Well, for the older pens, we do have to tend to use older parts, so we do salvage and keep pens that we do acquire over time.
So you have a pen graveyard somewhere in the store?
Yes, and some of them, basically what they call a pen sack, usually on the older pens would decay with time, so we have to replace that, and that's very easy to do. And this general cleaning gets it back in working order.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, one of the complaints we heard about when we were talking to the gentleman from Consumer Reports is the amount of time involved in you drop it off and come back 2 weeks later to pick it up. Hey, that's 2 weeks without, well, in your case, your pen. Is time an important function for your customers?
Not at Farney's. That's why we continue what Mr. Farney taught the Sullivans, is that one-on-one relationship. We have Chuck, who we call the pen doctor, who can literally repair the pen while you wait. If it's a major repair or if we have to order parts, it may take some time. But our ultimate goal is to hand it back to you so you can go on off to work and use it again right away.
Is there pride in being a pen repairman?
Chuck is very well known here in Washington, D.C. He's been doing repairs for over 20 years. I have another person in my catalog division who's done repairs for 20 years, and a lot of the positive letters we get from our customers are talking about how happy they are to get that pen back in working order. They almost miss it and don't know how to function until they get it back.
Chris Sullivan, thanks very much for being with us today. Appreciate
Thank
taking
you.
The time to come in. Chris Sullivan is the president of Farney's Pens here in Washington, D.C., and he joined us here in Studio 3A. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line before we have to change subjects. George now calling from Iowa City.
Oh, hello. I'm sitting here in my service van where been for the last 38 years fixing major appliances, and you know, the new ones, nobody even thinks about they might be repaired, other than if it's a $5,000 gourmet range, which is, you know, what I do now. But even thinks about fixing a washing machine anymore unless the guests are coming for the weekend,
or a dryer or a refrigerator.
Well, yeah, and it's always an urgency. You know, it always quit the day before Grandma showed up.
Well, that's always the case with these things, but nevertheless, new refrigerators aren't cheap.
No, but, you know, I think you could probably pay for a new refrigerator in owning it for 5 years. If you've got one sitting around that's been there for 15 years, I think it would pay for itself in 5 years. They're just that much more efficient.
Are new models, I assume, in all kinds of things, all kinds of businesses, the new models have all sorts of technology. I mean, refrigerators these days will order your groceries for you if you want them to.
Oh, they'll do that. I mean, I think they'd blow your nose if you wanted.
Probably would.
The problem is I think some of the manufacturers have gotten a lot of the disposable thing in their brain. And just finding service training, just finding a service manual, just seeing who programmed it and what it's supposed to do, and manufacturers don't supply that anymore. They used to, but it's now, they charge you to call their tech line to ask them a question about how it was wired. So They don't want it fixed. They want to sell it.
Well, George, have a good time on your route.
I'm on. Thanks.
Appreciate the phone call. When we come back from a short break, Germany's chancellor goes for the tried and true in his bid for re-election, and a new look of the Bolsheviks in Russia, where they've been banned. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation. We'll be back from a short break. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And here are the headlines from some of the stories NPR News is following today. Israeli forces clashed with hundreds of Jewish settlers over the evacuation of the Gaza Strip. Angry residents threw stones and eggs and torched garbage containers. Midnight tonight, local time, is the deadline for Jewish settlers to leave Gaza. And three men pleaded not guilty today to charges of passing on classified information to a foreign embassy. One man is a former Pentagon analyst. The other two, former employees of AIPAC, a pro-Israel lobbying group based in Washington, D.C. You can hear details on those stories and, of course, much more later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, the mayor of Atlanta is expected to sign a law barring panhandling in the city's downtown. But what about the guy struggling in your hometown? Should you give him money or not? The ethics of giving on the street tomorrow on Talk of the Nation. And Thursday, well, think back to Jimmy Cagney or Jimmy Smits. How about Warren Beatty in Bulworth or Ally McGraw in Love Story? What are your favorite death scenes of all time? The TOTN Summer Movie Awards will continue. If you've got a favorite nominee, send us your suggestion, TOTN@npr.org.